Okay, today is Monday, March 15th. We'll call the Committee on Ag Policy and Finance to order. Mr. Smith, take the roll, please.
Okay, Chair Sundin is present. Vice Chair Vang?
Present.
Representative Anderson?
Anderson present.
Mm-hmm. Representative Burkle?
Burkle present.
Representative Eklund? Representative Hansen R?
Hansen R present.
Representative Hansen J? Hansen J? Representative Cleavorn?
Present.
Present. Representative Lippert? Representative Lewick?
Lewick present.
Representative Miller?
Present.
Representative Nelson?
Present.
Representative Thompson?
Hansen present too. Sorry about that.
Thompson present.
All right. We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. We have the minutes of the last meeting before us. Representative Paul Anderson, do you have a motion on the minutes of the previous meeting?
I do, Mr. Chair. I would move those motion minutes.
Okay, the motion's been made to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. We have a pretty full agenda, four bills. We'll get right to it. The first bill up is a walkthrough of the governor's budget recommendations. Since this is just a walkthrough, and no votes, I'll present from the chair. We have about 20 minutes blocked out for this bill. So on with the show with House File 1524, Governor's Ag Funding Recommendations. And I'll move 1524 to get the bill before us. Okay, a few notes before we recognize Mr. Sullivan. We've already heard testimony from the governor's change item request, so that's been covered and discussed. This bill puts the recommendations into bill format and presents a complete picture, base level, and change items. We have staff to do a quick walkthrough, provide an opportunity for testimony, take questions, and then lay the bill over. House File 1524 will be the vehicle for the omnibus ag finance bill when we put our delete all together in the coming weeks, and we'll take further amendments then. With that, Mr. Sullivan, our nonpartisan House research analyst, could you do a quick walkthrough of Article 1?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Colby with House Research, and start off right away, House File 1524, with the first page. I'm going to distinguish between what are called base riders, or the riders that tend to appear in the ag finance bill every 2 years, and then the new riders that, for the most part, reflect the governor's change items as part of his budget proposal for the Department of Agriculture and the Board of Animal Health and the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute for fiscal years 22 and 23. But starting off, Ms. Conley has the bill up. This is all boilerplate rider language that's base here beginning. It shows the appropriation in total for the Department of Agriculture, the appropriation by fund, remediation, and general fund. And as is customary, appropriations from the agricultural fund, the federal fund, and other sources of money that are significant portions of the department's budget, they don't show up in this bill. This bill just covers general and remediation fund spending. So then moving into the first budgetary program for the Department of Agriculture, Subdivision 2, Protection Services. This is the budgetary program that includes most of the department's regulatory functions, food and feed safety, pesticide and fertilizer management, et cetera. Most of these riders are based, but if this county is actually on the screen now, starting on line 2.29, there's a new sentence, provides additional flexibility to the department. This is the rider that specifies how much money the department should allocate for compensation to livestock farmers or animals that are destroyed or crippled by wolves. The rider is pretty much the same as in years past, but on 2.29, new language would provide that if the Department of Agriculture received federal money for the same purpose to provide compensation to livestock owners, then the department may use an equivalent amount of the state appropriation each year to reimburse non-lethal prevention methods that are performed by federal wildlife services staff. So that ends on line 2.34. And again, that's new language that I don't believe has appeared in the bill before. So then, Ms. Connelly, if you would scroll down to line 3.18. This is paragraph D. This coincides with the change item to provide additional funding for the noxious weed and invasive plant program at the Department of Agriculture. The next paragraph E, is also new and reflects the governor's change item. This is one-time money for the industrial hemp program for IT development. The next paragraph F, is also new and provide additional funding for meat and poultry inspection services at the department. Following paragraph G, $66,000 each year would be additional funding to replace capital equipment in the Department of Ag's analytical laboratory, part of the governor's proposal. And then finally, the paragraph H, $274,000 the first year, $550,000 the second year, would be additional funding to maintain current service delivery. This is what's referred to in the governor's budget request as the operating adjustment. This is the portion of the entire operating adjustment request that falls under the programs within the category of protection services. So we'll see as we go through the bill for each budgetary program, the corresponding amount of the operating adjustment shows up within each subdivision. And this is, again, the piece for protection services. So then subdivision 3, the next budgetary program, the level at which the legislature appropriates funding to the department is the Ag Marketing and Development Program. The first rider, A, is base and is in the bill every 2 years, but the new paragraph B, beginning on 4.15, this is the language that goes with the governor's proposal for $100,000 one time for additional international marketing opportunities, including in-market representation in Taiwan. The 2019 budget bill provided an extra $100,000 per year for domestic and international marketing, and that's been rolled into the base, and that rider is not in this bill, but it is still part of the base budget for the department. This $100,000 would be an additional amount above and beyond what's provided under the base currently. And paragraph C is a base rider, money for dairy development and profitability. So scrolling down then to page 5.11. This is the $50,000 the governor's proposed each year at the Department of Agriculture for mental health outreach and support to farmers, including a 24-hour hotline, stigma reduction, and educational offerings. And this rider is similar to a one-time rider in the 2019 budget bill. The language is a bit different here, but in general, both appropriations were for mental health outreach. 5.17, this paragraph E, is also new. This is the pilot project to create farmland access teams and to upgrade the Minnesota FarmLink web application to connect farmers with those seeking to own farmland. And then paragraph F, $54,000 the first year and $109,000 the second year. This is the operating adjustment for ag marketing and development. Paragraph G is base. So that takes us to subdivision 4, the next budgetary program, agriculture, bioenergy, and bioproduct advancement. This is where the funding is provided for the AGREET, Agricultural Research, Education, Extension, and Technology Transfer Program. That's paragraph A, which is a base rider, including specified allocations from that total amount each year that go towards ag education, ag rapid response, and potato and wild rice breeding research. So that continues to the bottom of page 6 and on to page 7. Just one note on 7.3, there's language that's carried over from the 2019 bill that said of the appropriation for EGREET each year. The University of Minnesota may use up to $1 million each year for research on avian influenza. That's the 2019 rider as enacted into law. In 2020, the legislature modified that a bit and said that $1 million could be for avian influenza, salmonella, and other turkey-related research as well. So that's not in the bill currently for the committee. Then moving on down to 7.12, this is the beginning of the Ag-RE appropriation, agricultural growth, research, and innovation. And as in years past, the rider provides different eligible uses of the Ag-RE appropriation each year. It's quite a long list, as you can see. And that is base. This has been the allocation or the available spending areas that the legislature has provided in the past. And let's see, that continues then all the way on to page 8. And you'll see the allocations or the, I guess, earmarks, you might say, within the total Ag-RE appropriation begin on 8.25. Ms. Conley, maybe scroll down just a little bit. There we go. See that there's $1 million each year of the total Ag-RE appropriation can only be used for distribution to the state's county fairs to preserve and promote Minnesota agriculture. The next clause 2 starts on 8.29. This is the amount of Ag-RE that must be allocated to the bioincentive program. This is in the governor's proposal, this would be additional money than in the base, but the rider language that specifies how that money may be spent is the same as in years past. And then if you scroll down, let's see, you're in a good spot there, 9.9. This is new. This is part of the governor's proposal to increase Ag-RE by $1 million the first year from the base level and to dedicate that money only for facilitating the startup, modernization, or expansion of meat, poultry, egg, and milk processing facilities. The rest of the rider then down to 9.28 is base. And then on 9.28, you'll see the language that goes with the governor's proposal to appropriate $2 million per year base for biofuels, infrastructure, and financial assistance. And then at the end of subdivision 4 is the operating adjustment for this budget area. And then on to the final subdivision or budgetary program within the Department of Agriculture, Administration, and Financial Assistance. This is the area that pays for several designated pass-through grants the department awards, as well as the commissioner's office and certain other administrative functions of the agency. Paragraphs A, B, and C, D are all base that have been in there before. They specify certain amounts that are to be passed through from the department to designated recipients. Continues down 11. Let's see, you can go all the way to the bottom of page 11. And 12.22 is the next new item that I'd like to mention for the committee. And this is the governor's proposal to allocate $1 million each year to the Ag-BMP loan program. That language is in paragraph G. Paragraph H is the operating adjustment for administration and financial assistance. And just have a little bit left, the Board of Animal Health appears in section 3. You see that there's less money appropriated and also less in the way of rider language that specifies how that money is to be spent. The language under the Board of Animal Health is a base rider that designates how much is for ag emergency preparedness and response. You'll note that unlike the Department of Agriculture, in the bill as introduced, there isn't an amount specified for the operating adjustment, although an operating adjustment is part of the governor's budget proposal for the Board of Animal Health. Section 4. This is AURI, the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. As is customary in years past, there is no rider language for the AURI appropriation. And then finally, Section 5, this corresponds with the governor's proposal to reduce enacted appropriations for the Department of Agriculture in fiscal 2021 to recognize cost savings that occurred as a result of really working from home. Fewer expenses incurred by Department of Agriculture staff than anticipated before the pandemic. And the reduction, as in the earlier part of the bill, where there are the different budget programs and the amount that can be spent under each one, These reductions are allocated to each of the four programs. So paragraph A is a reduction to protection services in the current fiscal year 2021. B is ag marketing and development. C is ag bioenergy and bioproduct advancement. And D is administration and financial assistance. And with that, Mr. Chair, we've reached the end of Article 1.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Let's move on to Ms. Kromschroder from the department. Let's hear about Article 2. So please identify yourself for the record and begin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sherry Kromschroder. I am the Finance and Budget Director for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'll be doing the walkthrough of Article 2 for the agriculture statutory changes, beginning with Section 1 on line 13.22. So Section 1 increases the pesticide gross sales rate in fiscal year 22 from 0.5 for non-ag pesticides and from 0.55 for ag pesticides to 0.9%. To generate approximately $2.251 million in the agriculture fund beginning in fiscal year 23. This is to maintain critical laboratory services, equipment, and supplies to create two new pesticide education and label interpretation positions and to comply with OLA audit recommendations. For more background information on this fee change, you can refer to the change item titled Pesticide Fee Increase to Fund Laboratory and Urban Programs, found on page 73 of MDA's budget book. Section 2 begins on line 16.4. This creates a food handler license account in the agricultural fund and appropriates money deposited to the account to the commissioner for expenses related to licensing and inspecting food handlers under chapters 28 and 34A or rules adopted under one of those chapters. Section 3 creates a vending machine inspection account in the agricultural fund and appropriates money deposited to that account to the commissioner for expenses related to identifying and inspecting food vending machines under chapters 28 and 34A or any rules adopted under one of those chapters. The changes in Section 2 and 3 allow the department to shift general fund food handler licensing and vending machine inspection fees to the agricultural fund, which are approximately $3.6 million in receipts annually, a reduction of $3.6 million to the protection services general fund base makes this a budget neutral proposal to the general fund through dedication of the food handler license revenue to the ag fund for the program's use. For additional details related to this change item, to the changes in Section 2 and 3, you can refer to the change item titled Dedicated Food Licensing Fees, and that is on page 69 of MDA's budget book. Moving to Section 4, Section 4 establishes a biofuels infrastructure financial assistance program to make available grant funding to help service stations, particularly independent retailers and small chains, upgrade or replace fuel dispensing infrastructure in order to safely store and deliver high blends of biofuels. Subdivision 1 of this section establishes the definitions. Subdivision 2 establishes the program. Subdivision 3 creates a biofuels infrastructure account in the Ag Fund that will consist of money appropriated to the commissioner and any other money donated, allotted, transferred, or otherwise provided to the account, including interest. The funding identified in Article 1, Section 2, Subdivision 4C, will transfer into this account. Subdivision 4 assigns the commissioner as the administrator of the account and requires creation of a program requirements and a competitive process for projects that apply for assistance. Subdivision 5 states that the commissioner, in cooperation with the Biofuels Infrastructure Financial Assistance Program Advisory Committee, establish project eligibility guidelines and the application process. And Subdivision 6 spells out the legislative report criteria and metrics. Moving to Section 5, this section creates the Biofuels Infrastructure Financial Assistance Program Advisory Committee. Subdivision 1 establishes the definitions. Subdivision 2 creates the committee that will consist of no more than 15 members that are appointed by the commissioner. Subdivision 3 provides the advisory committee duties. Subdivision 4 states that the committee must meet at least 2 times per year. Subdivision 5 requires MDA's commissioner to provide staffing, meeting space, and administrative services for the advisory committee. And Subdivision 6 assigns the commissioner of agriculture or the commissioner's designee as the chair of the committee. And Subdivision 7 says that public members of this advisory committee shall serve without compensation or payment of expenses. For more information on the Biofuels Infrastructure Grant Program, please refer to MDA's change item titled Biofuels Infrastructure, and this can be found on page 15 of our budget book. And that concludes the walkthrough of Article 2. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kroschroder. Article 3 is a broadband, references broadband, which is not in our jurisdiction, so we'll put that aside for now. Before we go to testimony, I'll note that Mr. Savory, our nonpartisan fiscal analyst, has also prepared 2 tracking spreadsheets. If you have any questions, we'll take those up after the testimony. In addition to those who signed up, a written testimony was submitted by the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association and the Minnesota Farm Bureau. Welcome. State your name and please keep comments to 2 minutes or less. Tristan Wilmans.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tristan Wilmans. I'm the Vice President of Agronomy at Central Farm Service in South Central Minnesota. We're a full-service ag retail co-op. I've been serving on the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers Association Board since 2015. Minnesota growers are currently paying a higher rate for pesticide fees compared to neighboring states at today's rates on pesticide fees. The surrounding states, which include Wisconsin, Iowa, and North and South Dakota, have some form of registrant fee for each product sold in the respective state. Minnesota has a registrant fee plus a fee paid by the pesticide dealer that the neighboring states don't have. Increasing pesticide fees to Minnesota growers over 60% from last year at a time when grower profitability has been difficult the past 2 to 3 years. This only adds to the mental health concerns that Minnesota growers are already facing. These additional fees would take an additional $2 million out of the rural Minnesota economy, and increases in expenses to growers will only continue to drive consolidation of the number of growers in Minnesota, which leads to additional consolidation at the ag retail level as well. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Bill Bond, Minnesota Crop Production Retailers Association. He's a executive director there. Mr. Bond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bill Bond. As Chairman has said, executive director of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers Trade Association. We represent the agronomy departments of most co-ops in the state, over 600 certified crop advisors, and the companies that support providing the crop inputs that our growers get throughout Minnesota. We would ask that you consider and refrain from increasing the pesticide fees as is contained in this bill. We understand that there are needs within the laboratory. The commissioner was good enough to give a tour to me last fall to see what the needs are. We think that there are other places where those funds may be obtained, and this is a rather dramatic increase in the pesticide fees. We would ask you to not include this in the bill. Thank you.
Okay, understood. Thank you for your testimony. We have written testimony from Mr. Stu Lurie, Director of Government Relations of the Minnesota Farmers Union. I'll encourage everyone to absorb that written testimony, and we can move to questions and comments for the testifiers at this point.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This is Nancy. Timothy Rudnicki is also on the list. I think we missed over him.
I missed him. I'm sorry. Mr. Rudnicki, please.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am Tim Rudnicki, representing the Minnesota Biofuels Association, and I just want to voice our support for House File 1524, in particular Article 2, Sections 4 and 5, And in a nutshell, we support this bill and those provisions because it helps build on the success that we've had collectively working with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture to roll out biofuel infrastructure. The second key point is that it's funding that can help get the homegrown renewable energy produced in Minnesota to Minnesotans. And I guess two other quick points, it's a way of getting good value to consumers of energy needed to move their vehicles. And it's also a good way to provide some initiatives to start decreasing greenhouse gas emissions in the transportation sector while giving an overall boost to the economy. So once again, we stand in strong support of those provisions.
Thank you, Mr. Rudnicki. We have about 4 minutes for questions, if there are any questions for the testifiers. Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions for Mrs. Kromschroder on the ag pesticide fee increases. Ma'am, it seemed like a really hefty increase going from 0.5 to 0.9, nearly a 100% increase. What was the funding this fund took in last year? And the increase is over $2 million. Why such a large increase in 1 year at this, really, at this late time?
See, that'd be Kristen Wilms.
Does Kromschroder handle that?
Kromschroder. Ms. Kromschroder, I'm sorry.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. The pesticide regulatory account fee change is about $2.251 million, and the figure actually covers a little over $1 million would be used for critical laboratory services. $350,000 is to help fund supplies in two analytical chemist positions in our MDA laboratory. And $325,000 of that is to create two new pesticide education and label interpretation positions. And then $520,000 is to provide additional resources for the purchase of analytical equipment, supplies, and personnel for the lab to add three chemicals as requested by a recent OLA audit.
Mr. Chair?
Follow up, Representative Anderson?
Yeah, I didn't get the answer to the question, Ms. Kromschroder, of how much the fund took in last year. And it seems to me I recall early in the session, Commissioner Peterson talking about this to be funding an educational program here in the metro area. And it would seem to me that since the vast majority of these funds come in from ag pesticide purchases, it doesn't seem to be the right place, in my opinion, to fund those positions. And again, my last question, what was the funding of the program in the last fiscal year?
Representative Anderson, Mr. Chair, I do not have that figure right in front of me, but I can certainly look that up.
But is it safe to say that it's nearly a 100% increase going from 0.5 to 0.9, or about a 90% increase based on just the level of the fee?
Ms. Kromschroder.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, it represents approximately 64% increase over the actual receipts that we collected in fiscal year 20, and that was $3.5 million.
Okay, thank you. No more questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, we've got about 30 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would direct the committee to look at subsection E, that the last time that the pesticide fee was raised, I believe in 2010, we actually estimated that it was going to bring in $6.6 million and gave the commissioner the authority to raise it on his own to reach that amount. And I believe that those expectations were off, and therefore the department has not been able to do what was intended the last time the fee was raised. So it's been a very long time since it was raised, and it's time to do what the department is required to do.
Thank you. I didn't hear a question. Would the commissioner concur with that?
Mr. Chairman and members, that is one of the reasons we put it forward. There are other reasons, too, that we have put that fee increase forward, including the legislative audit report. But we do have our division director, Josh Stamper, could provide more information if you're interested in that at this point, or if you're short on time, we understand that, too, as well.
We are cramped on time. If you have additional information for us, please forward it on via email. Representative Hansen, did you have something else?
Nope, on to the next.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we'll continue our work on this bill, but seeing no further questions, House File 1524 is laid over. Representative Burkle, you have the next bill up, House File 1059, Wolf Elk Depredation, which we just heard about in this previous bill. Representative Grossel has a similar bill, but Representative Burkle is taking the lead. Representative Burkle, please move your bill and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 1059 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. Mr. Chair, I also have an author's amendment, an A1 amendment.
Let's hear your amendment.
Yeah, can I move that now and explain it?
Please move the amendment.
So the A1 amendment just gets the bill into the shape. You saw the Department of Ag's budget. Just put the House File 1059 into the shape so it matches the department's budget. It inserts the dollar amounts for both programs, which you saw at $175,000 for wolves and $155,000 per year for elk. These are the amounts in the last budget cycle. Also adjusts the language to give the flexibility needed for the department to utilize wolf dollars for non-lethal work. This does not result in less funding available for wolf depredation, but it does allow federal resources to be brought to Minnesota to expand on that investment. Minnesota has been receiving federal grants to pay for depredation compensation as well, so if the federal grant is secured, a portion of this funding would be available to work with USDA on non-lethal measures. Finally, the amendment adjusts the language in the elk provision to provide flexibility to use some of the funds for protection of stored crops if the account allows. This has been shown to be an emerging need and would allow the department to explore this as an opportunity for farmers to proactively protect harvested crops or feed. So that's the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the A1 amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, that motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. No further amendments are submitted. Representative Burkle, please present your bill as amended, and let's hear from your witnesses.
All right, I won't take up too much time. As we've heard, House File 1059 is the Wolf Elk Depredation Program at Department of Ag, which provides a safety net for farmers who have crop loss or livestock loss due to wolves or elk. Program has been successful for years, and I'll let my testifier step in and give you some background in the interest of.
Okay, we have Mr. Shane Insane. I'm licensed to butcher names, so from Minnesota Farm Bureau.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Shane Isney. I am a farmer from Badger, Minnesota, and serve on the Minnesota Farm Bureau Board of Directors. I want to express Minnesota Farm Bureau's support for House File 1059 and thank Representative Burkle for bringing this bill forward. I farm with my brother near Badger, Minnesota, and we raise corn, soybeans, spring wheat, alfalfa, and ryegrass. We also raise beef cattle on our family farm. These two important programs compensate farmers for crop or fence damage caused by elk and livestock killed or crippled by wolves. Living in northern Minnesota, this is a very real issue to me. We've seen an increase of the gray wolf activity on our farm, targeting our cattle herd over the past several years. We've had up to 4 calves killed on a single night. These were confirmed by a DNR conservation officer as the work of gray wolves. It is also apparent that our overall herd health has suffered because of being pursued by these predators. We have tried deterrent practices on our farm, but they are neither practical nor effective. Without this compensation, it would be difficult for us to sustain our herd and continue our livelihood. I appreciate the opportunity to express Minnesota Farm Bureau's support for the depredation programs and ask for your continued support for these important programs. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Insani. Next up, we have Bruce Clevin, Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association. Mr. Clevin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bruce Clevin, representing Minnesota State Cattlemen this afternoon. Just want to put our support on the record for the bill. Mr. Isnape outlined the issues that we have, especially with our members up in northern Minnesota, and so we encourage you to support the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any discussion to the bill? Representative Logue, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to both the testifiers. I just wanted to stress that particularly the wolf issues really stretch across a big chunk of Minnesota. It comes down as far as Pine County, Isanti, you know, that's just north of the metro area, as well as all the way up to our friends up there in Badger. This is, I think, first time I had anything to do with this. I testified in favor of this as a cattle producer in the late 1990s. It's something we work with every year, and that elk depredation issue is also gigantic. you can literally lose 40 acres of crop in overnight if you have a elk damage. So, and I believe even there's even a little wolf damage there in Carlton County, Mr. Chair. So it's a good bill, and it pretty much mirrors what's in the commissioner's bill with a few little additional flexibilities. So I strongly support the bill.
Thank you, Representative Look. Any other comments? Okay, hearing none, seeing none. House File 1059, as amended, is laid over. Thank you very much, Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We had House File 800 next on the agenda, but Representative Loke, I think your bill 1547 might not need the entire time we blocked for it. So let's take yours next up before we take up House File 800. We could probably use a little extra time on that one. So, Representative Lewis, please move your bill. House File.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would move House File 1547 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus ag finance bill. I'll briefly explain the bill. It basically mimics language that's in the commissioners and the governor's bill right now. There's a need to make sure that we clearly identify these funds as they come in from the people that actually purchase those licenses, and just make sure we don't get them lashed up in the general fund and then have to fight to get them out. But the Minnesota Department of Agriculture can certainly speak to that. With that, I think we have one testifier from Department of Agriculture, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. I understand Catherine Simon, Director of the Minnesota Department of Food and Feed Safety Division, is present. Catherine Simon, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Simon, and I serve as the Director of the Food and Feed Safety Division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you in advance for allowing me to speak today. Part of the Department of Agriculture mission is to enhance all Minnesotans' quality of life by equitably ensuring the integrity of our food supply. We believe this bill to dedicate the food licensing fees will allow us to achieve this mission more effectively. We take our responsibility very seriously and believe, based on the policy of the legislature stated in Minnesota Statute Chapter 28A, that food licensure is a necessary step in consumer protections. Application for a license is the first step to ensuring the appropriate food safety systems are in place at food businesses. Additionally, an accurate and up-to-date license inventory is a key input to establishing the ongoing resource needs of the food regulatory programs. Ongoing inspection and enforcement activities also ensure that food safety standards are maintained and necessary corrective measures occur so public health is protected over time. However, food industries are historically dynamic in nature due to changes in food science, production methods, consumer preferences, sales models, and other influencing economic drivers. Examples of food handler industry changes which will directly impact the resources needed for program services include the license numbers, the shifts in facility operation sizes, and modifications to operation types and complexities. Retail and manufactured food inspection staff must remain up to date in both scientific knowledge and regulatory training for the food programs to deliver quality and equitable public health protection services. And staffing does continue to be the most significant resource need for these programs. Food safety and administrative programs for the retail and manufactured foods are currently operated and maintained through a combination of funding sources from general fund, most significantly, but also federal contracts, federal cooperative agreements, and several other minor fee accounts which are dedicated in agriculture fund. Federal contracts and grants for food safety programs are currently being adjusted by federal agencies and reduced, which will impact food program resources and services in the coming years. And to be clear, the dedicating of the current license fees will not fully support the program activities alone, and protection services funds will still be needed to maintain the food safety services. However, the dedicated accounts will allow the staffing and program administration needs of the retail and manufactured food programs to be met in a manner that's more similar to other public health programs in the agency, such as the commercial feed program. And historically, the food program reliance on general fund appropriations has not allowed for a timely program flexibility and modernization, which has resulted in inspection delays until additional appropriation requests were successfully completed. These delays and the general fund budget cycle has limited some of the long-term planning and flexibility capabilities for both the retail and manufactured food programs as a result. And specifically today, the dedicated revenues will allow the programs to adapt to industry changes more quickly through prompt hiring and other process change investments. The food programs will have a greater connection directly to the numbers and types of facilities which are being licensed on a daily basis. And this proposal will allow the division to proactively address long-term professional staffing needs and increase both the resiliency and responsiveness to change in the regulated industries. So thank you again for your time this afternoon, and I am available to address any additional questions.
Any questions for the testifier or the author at this point? Okay, hearing none, seeing none, Representative Lewick, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would renew my motion that House File 1547 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. Hearing that, House File 1547 is laid over. Next up is our Representative Wolgamott with House File 800 regarding meat poultry processing safety. The bill is referred to us from the Labor Committee, where it had a thorough hearing. The bill deals with statutes outside of our jurisdiction, but meat and poultry processing and the workers that do this work are obviously of interest to us. Let's try to stay focused on the issues within the ag jurisdiction, recognizing other committees are working on issues in their jurisdiction. We use about half of the remaining time for testimony and half for member questions, comments, but we will vote on this by 2:28. So members and witnesses, please be concise. Vice Chair Vang, can you move the bill for the author to get the bill before us?
So move. I'm Mr.
Chair Vang. Okay, the bill of House File 800 is before us. Representative Wolgamott, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm here this afternoon to present House File 800, the Safe Workplaces for Meat and Poultry Processing Workers Act. When the COVID-19 pandemic first hit central Minnesota, I heard heartbreaking and horrifying stories from my constituents about unsafe working conditions at a large local processing plant. You'll hear some of these stories today, along with stories from meat processing workers all throughout our state. This legislation provides comprehensive workplace health and safety protections and ensures workers have access to the benefits and training needed to work safely during this pandemic and beyond. Additionally, this bill establishes a workers' rights coordinator that's housed within the Department of Labor and Industry will be dedicated to enforcement and compliance. I am aware of some concerns from smaller meat processing plants And I want to make clear to them and to the members of this committee that the intent of this legislation is not to put anyone out of business, but to support these workers who have unnecessarily sacrificed their physical and financial health and that of their families to keep Minnesota communities fed. I welcome input from employers and stakeholders, and I'm committed to working with them and members to address their concerns as this bill moves through the legislative process. There have been 132 meatpacking worker deaths and 2,900 meatpacking workers infected or exposed in the United States. My constituents in District 14B have told me that they did not have adequate PPE, social distancing, or were compelled to work even when they felt sick. Mr. Chair and members, that is unacceptable. We need to move forward House File 800 to help provide the enforcement tools necessary to make sure that there's transparency and accountability to keep my constituents and your constituents and all of Minnesota's meat and poultry processing workers safe on the job. With that, Mr. Chair, I will defer to my testifiers, and we'll be more than happy to answer yours or any members' questions.
Firstly, Representative Vang, there's an A4 amendment. What's your pleasure on the A4?
Mr. Chair, I move the A4 amendment.
Okay, the A4 is before us. Any comments on that from the author?
Thank you, Representative Vang and Mr. Chair. Note, this amendment is mostly technical in nature. It just removes duplicative language.
Great. The A4, on the A4, all those in favor of adopting the A4, say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay.
Nay.
If that motion prevails, the amendment is adopted. Okay, the bill is amended, is before us. Representative Wolgamont, you've given your overview of the bill. Let's hear from your first witness and begin testimony. We have a number of them, so we'll make sure to hear from all viewpoints and provide approximate equal time for those who support and have concerns. Please be brief. Note, if you start to drag things during testimony, I'll provide another reminder. As mentioned, we'll vote by 2:28, and we want to include time for member questions and comments. To your testifiers, Mr. Matt Utek, President UFCW Local 663.
Thank you. Thank you, and good afternoon, Chairman Sedin and members of the Agricultural Finance and Policy Committee. My name is Matt Utek, and I am president of the United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 663. I represent more than 13,200 hardworking retail, meatpacking, processing, food preparation, manufacturing, healthcare, and other workers in Minnesota and in Iowa. Today, I'm here to testify to the importance and need for consistent policies and accountability measures that protect meatpacking and poultry workers' safety. They are critical to our state's safe food supply. Meatpacking is one of the most dangerous industries for workers on the job. Health and safety is continuously brought up as one of the most important issues facing meat and poultry workers in Minnesota. Last year, COVID-19 outbreaks in Worthington wreaked havoc in the pork plant where our union members work. We struggled to piece together improved safety plans to protect meatpacking and poultry workers from the deadly virus with resources at hand. While the guidelines were developed and helped the industry in Minnesota, this certainly is not a sustainable solution. Meanwhile, in May of 2020, Congress passed the HEROES Act, which earmarked $36 billion for agricultural assistance. In fact, $5.8 million for direct payments to turkey and pork producers to compensate for market disruptions and associated costs due to COVID-19. This meant farmers were paid to euthanize their animals, while the workers in the processing plants were hit hard by COVID. While the state decided to pay the farmers for the disruption, the workers were left ignored and exposed, literally exposed to the virus due to the unsafe working conditions. The work that meatpacking and poultry workers do is critical to providing families with food for their tables. The work that farmers do is also critical, providing families with food, pandemic or not. This is not a food versus workers' safety. What we're asking for is a fair playing field so that the safety of workers goes hand in hand with safe food that the farmers supply from the fields. Minnesota Safe Workplaces and Meat and Poultry Processing Workers Act provides comprehensive workplace health and safety protections for workers to improve the safety of our food supply. The state must do better for those workers. Please consider passing House File 800, and thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Utick. Next up, we have a twofer. Steve and Kelly Schneider from Schneider Custom Meats, please share a couple of minutes with us. Steve and Kelly Schneider.
Can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Please go ahead and identify yourself and proceed.
This is Steve Schneider from Schneider Custom Meats. Thank you for your time today. I want to come before you with some concerns on the bill. We've owned our business since 2015. We have 6 employees. We do about 500 beef, 600 pigs a year up here, about 45 minutes south of Duluth. One of the concerns in the bill would be the mandatory sick leave. I don't think it's fair that they did not include grocery stores, which is something that we do compete with. I also have a full-time job at the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and I've been there for 15 years. I am a union member there. I'm not against unions, but our sick leave at the prison does not get paid out 100%. This bill states that we have to pay unused sick leave 100% of the time. A full-time ergonomist on our staff is just, we would not be able to do that with only 6 employees. As far as safety goes, it's a cumbersome safety workers program in this bill. We already teach our staff safety. The reason why staff safety is so important is because we do not have enough people in the job market right now to bring on. So a trained individual is super important to our business. And if they get hurt and we're down people right now, we just can't keep up with the demand that's out there. Speaking of demand, I don't know where the farmers would go. I mean, my company would not be able to continue on, even though my business is paid for, I would not be able to continue on serving our local community. And I do appreciate the state grant that we received in 2015 to bring our business to fruition. I would like to continue to be able to do that for our local farmers in this area. Like I said, workman's comp covers our safety issues if somebody gets hurt, and we don't want to have a workman's comp claim. That's why we train our staff to be safe. It is a dangerous job. He is correct with that, and it is very important that we train our staff properly, and that's why we do that. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schneider. Is Kelly Schneider available, or does that complete the testimony?
That completes my testimony. That's my wife, and she's not available at the moment.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your time. Next up, you have Yolanda Martinez. Please identify yourself and take 1 minute, please, to offer your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman Sundin and members of the Agricultural Finance and Policy Committee. My name is Yolanda Martinez, and I am a union member of the United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 663. I've worked at JBS for 31 years and have been a union member for 31 years. I work in the Cryovac department at the plant, Cryovac being that I work with the machines that seal the pork products in the plastic. And one of the big safety concerns for me is the fast line speeds at the plant. We are expected to do quality work, and we hold ourselves to that high quality. But when line speeds are fast, the quality is no longer as good. And it is clear to me that companies value profits over workers' health. That means they value the product at the expense of mine and my co-workers' health. Painful. Due to the repetitive nature of the work over the years, I had to have shoulder surgery on my left shoulder. I am right-handed, but now my right hand is hurting during work, so I have to use my left hand, which again puts unwanted pressure on that side. This type of repetitive work comes as no surprise to me, and there has to be a better way. I deserve a fair shake in my safety and health during work, and House File 800 gives workers a chance at that. Please support House File 800 that elevates the health and safety for myself and my coworkers at JBS in Worthington. I'm excited about Section 4 of the bill that establishes the Safe Worker Program Committee and training. It will be able to address some of my concerns that I have brought forward today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Yolanda Martinez. Next up, we have Tamara Nelson, Executive Director of Minnesota AgriGrowth. A couple of minutes, please.
Thank you, Chair Sundin and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. My name is Tamara Nelson, and I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota AgriGrowth Council. AgriGrowth is a nonprofit, nonpartisan membership organization. We represent agriculture from the farmer to the food industry, and our members are diverse in size and structure and in terms of what they produce. They include farmers, meat and poultry processors, and branded food companies, as well as cooperatives and others that support the industry. Our membership and our industry play a critical role in bringing Minnesota products to local markets and to the world, as has been stated. As currently written, we have serious concerns with this bill. From the first weeks of the pandemic, our members' words and actions clearly showed that their number one priority was the safety, health, and well-being of their employees. Even pre-pandemic food and worker safety measures, such as masking, face shields, goggles, gloves, protective clothing, et cetera, was already in place. But during the pandemic, our members quickly expanded and adjusted those according to the state and federal guidelines provided by no less than half a dozen agencies. Our members' actions were proactive and innovative, and they were transparent to the public. The ag and food sector is our second largest economic driver, and our industry's response to COVID-19 was critical as food outlets for consumers shifted quickly. Our members excelled at adapting and innovating in order to keep employees safe while continuing to feed consumers. We look forward to continuing to work with lawmakers to promote a safe and vibrant agri-food industry. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Jessica Velasco. Please offer your testimony for about a minute or so. Jessica Velasco. Okay. Going once, twice, Jessica Velasco. Okay, we'll put Jessica on hold. We'll go to Brian Schatz, President of the Minnesota Association of Meat Processors. Take a couple of minutes to offer your testimony.
Hello, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Schatz. I'm President of the Minnesota Association of Meat Processors. I've been on the board for the past 8 years and trying to work with the state on a lot of these bills that get put through. This one we feel is an excessive burden on small markets that are such as what we represent. Safe workplaces for meat processing will put unfair and competitive labor regulations onto small processors, and legislation for sick time can be accrued paid to every employee. Like our businesses, most small processors have retail that must compete against the grocery stores, but this legislation specifically excludes grocery stores from this mandatory. The legislation also calls for cumbersome and costly safe worker program, which is targeted to reducing musculoskeletal disorders. This legislation requires each meat business to have a committee that includes certified professional ergonomist, a licensed board certified physician, trained in occupational medicine, and 3 employees who have completed a general industry outreach course. As you can imagine, most, if not all, small processors could not afford to employ a committee as listed above. I'm afraid that this legislation passes, many small operators will cease to operate. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Schatz. Next up, we have Maria Elena Gutierrez. Please take a minute for your testimony.
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, okay. Please. Go ahead. Identify yourself and continue.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for being here and listen our testimonies. My name is Maylena Gutierrez. I live in St. Cloud, and I am the director of Fe Justicia, a faith and justice organization. So since the pandemic began, our workers have been in a stressful environment. I have received many calls from families who are afraid to report their relatives were infected at work and ended up in the hospital with respiratory problems. One night around 4 a.m., a woman called me for help. She said that her husband was sick and that he was in the hospital. The doctor told her that she had to be prepared because her husband was getting worse. "How can I get ready?" she said. "We were both working on the same chicken plant, and we haven't worked for a month because he caught COVID-19 after another workers got sick in the plant. I am praying God for his life. The doctor told me to get ready, but I don't have money for anything, not even for eat." This was one of many phone calls I received from 4 a.m. to 10 p.m. And this is when we started bringing the concerns to our representatives. I keep getting phone calls from workers that they are getting sick for the second time because the conditions of work are getting worse. We know that HF-800 will help for the safety of our workers and families who are not getting paid while they are sick. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we would have Mr. Matthew Sheets from the Land Stewardship Project. Please introduce yourself and offer your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Sundin. My name is Matthew Sheets, an organizer with Land Stewardship Project, a membership-driven organization that works with farmers, rural people, and allies across the state. One of the things that that our animal ag farmer members have been talking about for years is the need for Minnesota to rethink the way we do meat processing in our state. Local meat processing facilities have close at an alarming rate, creating more reliance on for farmers, small and large, to utilize large processing operations like the ones that are being talked about today. This had some pretty alarming effects for farmers and rural communities when these plants closed during the pandemic. Unsafe working conditions led to critical workers getting sick and eventually processing plants shutting down or workers or working at a severely reduced capacity, creating a flood of animals that needed to be processed across the state. This not only affected the farmers that had their animals processed at these large plants, but it also affected those that were still able to utilize a small local processor. I heard from multiple LSP farmer members who were distressed because they couldn't get the same type of access that they had with their local processor before the pandemic. As the glut of animals that was suddenly put onto the market started to be funneled into smaller processors, some of our farmers told us that their local processor was booked further than a year and a half out. During that time, you know, animals don't stop growing. They continue to live. They don't just wait for us. They need to be fed and kept healthy before they are processed. That is input costs that farmers need to spend without getting paid for their product. And when you're a small processor or a small producer, the money that needs to be spent can be super critical to your operation. The health of rural communities relies on the health of everybody in the community. Farmers, workers, and everybody needs to be protected so that we can have a robust rural economy. We need safe working conditions in meat processing so that we can protect the families that live and work in our rural communities and protect the food system that we all and farmers rely on. This pandemic, but the pandemic response actions in this bill will help with that protection. And I encourage all you as committee members to support this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I think you're muted.
Thanks for keeping an eye on me. We have we can go back to Jessica Velasco. If she's present, go ahead and identify yourself and offer your testimony.
Aquí te están llamando otra vez. Excuse me, the Jessica is telling me that the person who's going to testify is Pamela.
Pamela?
Pamela, yes.
Okay, Pamela, if you're connected, please identify yourself.
Oh, sorry for the confusion.
Okay, go ahead, identify yourself and offer your testimony, please.
Hi, my name is Pamela Lomeli. I am a young organizer with Unidos Minnesota, and I live in Worthington, Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Pamela. I am a young organizer with Unidos Minnesota. We know that the agriculture fuels the economy throughout the state. In Worthington, many, if not all of the peers have someone or know of someone that works in the meat packing plants like JBS. I remember the day that JBS shut down to add certain things to better support their employees from getting the virus. It was little over a week when we heard that they were reopening. My family didn't understand why. Why, when they wanted to stay home and quarantine for the 2 weeks to help stop the spread of the virus. I know my parents and many others were confused and shocked. Many of the young organizers were questioning if the reason to reopen was for the benefit and well-being of who. We then realized that our communities play a key role in the ecosystem of agriculture, but are we being heard and taken care of? We know that all roles are important, but how do we support one another? The work that meat packers do isn't for everyone. The knives and gears they put on and use daily wears on their body. They are essential to my family and to your family. But it doesn't stop there. The meat packers that work at plants like JBS not only provide a meal to Worthington and the state of Minnesota, but to the nation and worldwide. How do we elevate their work and ensure that by supporting them and supports the agriculture sector in general? So I asked you to approve the HF 800. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, you're muted again.
Someday I'm going to learn this. Thank you. That concludes the list of testifiers here. So I guess we can go on to questions and from the committee. Any questions up there? I see Representative Hansen would be up first, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question are for the testifiers who were opposed to the bill. I was looking at subdivision H, subsection T, which related to notification of rights. It is, was commonly known as the Packing House Workers Bill of Rights. And there was a 2007 law that was passed. And then on January 21st, 2015, there was a legislative audit review that said that the legislature needed to clarify the law. So my question is that section about the Packing House Workers Bill of Rights for written notification about the rights of the employees provided in their own language, if the people opposing the bill support that section, section T as in Tom.
Any response from the people that have weighed in against the bill? Please identify yourself and respond.
Chairman Tamara Nelson from Minnesota AgriGrowth. I believe in the case of our membership, they are supportive of providing that information in the languages required.
Okay. Representative Hansen, anything further?
The other testifiers that it opposed, if they could say.
Is there anyone else wants to weigh in on this?
Steve Schneider Custom Meats here, Chairman.
Please continue.
Yes, we would not oppose to know what their rights are. That would absolutely be necessary. We value our employees. I have no further comment.
Representative Hansen, anything further?
Mr. Schatz.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Lippert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just simply have a comment. I want to thank Representative Wolgamott for his work on this bill and bringing this forward. I think it's just absolutely critical that we have protections for our workers who are putting food on our table, Minnesotans. And I think it's also very clear, especially when you have a large workforce for whom English is not the primary language, that we need additional protections in place and need to make sure that workers are aware of their rights and that workers don't have to go, don't feel forced to go to work when they're sick. So I think these are needed reforms, and I appreciate your work on the bill, and I thank the testifiers for testifying today, too.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Lippert. I believe Representative Burkle was up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple quick questions. First off, for Mr. Utek or Ms. Martinez, either one could answer or both. I'm curious if currently in the plants you're involved with, I'm assuming there's safety committees for worker safety committees that workers are involved with and maybe ergonomics committees that you work with your unions and plant management. Is that true or false?
To the testifiers, please respond to Representative Burkle's question.
Representative Burkle, this is Matt Utek, president of UFCW Local 663. That's true. There are safety committees in the unionized plants. However, the one thing I would like to point out is that more than half of the workforce in the state work in non-union facilities that do not have a collective bargaining agreement in place or safety committees that they can report to. This is not just a union-driven bill. This is as much about, and maybe more so, the non-union workers in the state of Minnesota and the hazards they face on a daily basis.
Thank you, Mr. Utek. Does anyone else care to respond? Okay, Representative Burkle, anything further?
Just a quick comment. I know the intention from Representative Wolgamott is probably pure here as far as not running small businesses out of business, but you know, in the end, the intention might be good, but the practicality, what is requiring for small plants like Mr. Schneider's, for instance. I'll refer back to Mr. Sheets' comments about the consequences that this has on smaller plants and the availability of small processing in the state, given what happened last year in our food supply chain. I just think it's short-sighted. And I think the bill's intent might be well placed, but I think he's going to run a lot of small plants out of business. That's all I've got.
Thank you, Representative Burkle. Representative Wolgamott, would you like to respond to that briefly?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Again, thank you for that comment, Representative Burkle. I want to hear solutions. I've heard a lot of concerns. I'm more than willing to work with those stakeholders on solutions if there are certain thresholds that we could put in to make this bill work better for the small businesses. I'm more than open to that. Again, would welcome the chance. This bill still has a long way to go through the process, and I'm more than willing to work with you, Representative Burkle, and with the testifiers here today to make sure that we can take these concerns and turn them into solutions.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Did Representative Burkle, did you have anything else at this point?
Nothing further. Sorry, my hand was still up.
Okay. Representative Vang, following Representative Nelson, I think he was up first. Representative Nelson.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think the workers' rights is definitely important, and keeping a safe workers and also safe food supply is paramount for agriculture, not only for the individuals working in it, in the processing, and also keeping a stable and healthy food supply is very important. I think one of the things that has been raised in concern is by Mr. Sheets, Mr. Schneider, and I don't remember the testifier who was the Minnesota Association of Meat Cutters or whatever that was, but was really the negative effects that this is going to have on our small businesses. The farms that are able to do direct marketing and not go through the large meat process such as JBS and Hormel. These small ones are getting smaller in number. We heard testimony on that, and some of the regulations in here are going to be burdensome on them. Having to, some of the panel that's put together for safety, I don't think any of them are opposed to safety. However, the burdensomeness of this requirements, you're dealing with something very different when you've got a multi-billion dollar packing company versus a small mom and pop shop. And then you exclude the grocery stores. Our local grocery store, they get in quarters of beef that are, and they process them out and do the same fabricating that I'm sure Mr. Schneider does. And, you know, so he's in direct competition with our local grocery stores that are doing this. And yet they're excluded out of this. And, you know, I do believe that the USDA has a size definition of what is considered large and small. And I would strongly encourage you to look into delineating out what is large and what is small and what requirements are applicable to either size of the processing plants. And I also kind of wonder, you know, this is, we're talking about all sorts of different meats. There's definitions of the different meats in this. We're also seeing a large increase coming on of protein or plant-based protein and meats. And would those plants fall under the same category for worker safety and things like that? And that would probably be my question for the author was, you know, was this some of the plant-based proteins, would, you know, the workers in those plants, are they going to be, you know, they're competing with the meat market. They're calling themselves meat. Are they going to be subject to these same regulations?
Representative Wolgamott, would you please respond and keep in mind we have one more question after you respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Nelson. Again, just your earlier concerns about the small businesses. So far to this time, I've had this bill introduced for months. I haven't gotten a single solution or feedback from from these people that you're concerned with. I'm more than willing to take a look at, as I've mentioned, I think twice, I'm more than willing to take a look at putting in some thresholds or some delineations, as you said, to make sure that, you know, we can achieve the goal of keeping workers safe, especially at these bigger plants, without putting any of these businesses out of work. So absolutely, would love to work with you on coming up with that as this bill goes through the process. As far as your question about the plant-based plants, I would like to defer to House Research for that to get their interpretation of on that question.
Does House Research have anything to offer at this point on plant-based protein?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee,
Sullivan.
The question was, would the bill as drafted apply to plant-based protein processing facilities? Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
I think this is just kind of an open discussion at this point. It's kind of a new question.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, then I would just note that the bill defines meat packing products as meat food products and poultry food products. So if the question's about the scope of the bill currently, I think it's limited to meat processors, but I'm sorry if that wasn't where the conversation was headed, Mr. Chair.
It sounds like there's room for a better definition. Representative Nelson, follow up.
No, thank you for that. And I would encourage, you know, continued work on this. I think it, you know, we got to make sure that we're protecting our both our workers and our small businesses. We got to make sure we protect Main Street, small town America here. And I think this bill kind of is drafted. I definitely think there's support for workers, but I think it also hurts small town rural America.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Second to the last question from Samantha Vang. Representative Vang, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a few comments. I just wanted to first thank Representative Wolgamott for bringing forward this bill. This is a good bill. It's really important. Since the beginning of the pandemic, one of the first and hardest hit outbreaks came from our meatpacking industry. And, you know, it's incredible of what, you know, the workers have to go through. And so I want to thank the workers for all that you've done, for your work. And when everyone else had the option to social distance and quarantine, you all continued to work and to keep us getting through this pandemic. So I want to thank you for that. And so, you know, Representative Wolgama, I'm happy to be a co-author of this bill. This is a great bill. This bill highlights that when we have good businesses, it's dependent on having good, healthy workers. And I hope that members can see that. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would assume that this bill is a result of the pandemic that hit us last year. And yes, there were problems in a lot of industries, and meatpacking was one of them. But since those early days of the headlines and plants shutting down and animals having to be euthanized, the industry itself has kind of righted the ship and gotten back on track. And we are hearing relatively little in the way of issues at our packing plants today. Things they've done and added, PPE is provided at no cost to workers. They have additional cleaning stations. Frequent sanitizing is taking place. Some of these directions are given in multiple languages, as they should be. There's been adequate break time for putting on the PPE, bathroom breaks such as that. So really, since the early instances when we didn't know a lot about the disease, I think the industry itself has really done a good job in increasing worker safety. And already the packing industry is regulated by, I've counted up to 11 different agencies, state agencies, federal agencies, and there would appear to be adequate regulation of the meatpacking industry. And one last comment, Mr. Chair. Since most of the focus of this bill is on outstate facilities, this really is going to affect greater Minnesota immensely. And I was a bit confused by the testimony from land stewardship. On one hand, they say they support the smaller processing plants and how important they are. And there are a lot of programs being put into place to encourage more local processing. Yet they say they are in favor of this bill. And several of our testifiers have said that this bill may put them out of business. So unless there are major changes made, this is going to adversely impact greater Minnesota, the workforce out there, the animal industry. And for that reason, Mr. Chair, I cannot support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Lewick, you have a question?
Yes, I guess first, Mr. Chair, could you refresh me, where is this bill headed?
Okay, this the motion was to send it on to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I missed that. I guess this question is for the bill author. Do you have any idea of the rough numbers of small meat processing co-ops and businesses out there that don't have the capacity to put on these technical experts? Do you have any concept of the percentage of those businesses that, like some testifiers have indicated, would likely put them out of business?
Representative Wolgama.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Lewick. Well, I don't know that exact number. I do know that I have said a number of times today that I'm more than willing to hear solutions from those businesses so that we can address their concerns and provide that goal of keeping workers safe and making sure that we aren't putting any businesses out of work. I've expressed that many times and will continue to express that. I've heard a lot of concerns. I'm ready to hear solutions. I'm ready to work with you, Representative Lewick, and any of the stakeholders that have concerns that this bill would put them out of business.
Representative Lewick, can you follow up?
Yes, I certainly thank the bill author for that. I've got a suggestion, and that would be that the bill author work really closely with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, who can point you to all of those small businesses that are literally pedaling as fast as they can simply to survive. They frankly don't have time to follow me or you, Representative Wolgamoth, around on, oh, what are we going to do today? There is a clear venue, a lot of data there, right over in the Minnesota Department of Ag that's been absolutely working their buns off for the last 20 years trying to expand our small local market meat processors So again, I will help you, give you the phone numbers for the people over there, Department of Ag, if that's necessary. But I can just, I share Representative Anderson's concern. This bill is not even remotely ready even to be moved on to another committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Utick, you have 1 minute to offer advice.
Thank you, Chairman Sedin. I would just like to get back to some of the comments that Representative Anderson made around COVID-19. And yes, COVID-19, we all have good reason to believe that there's light at the end of the tunnel. A lot of work was done in the union facilities and non-union alike to make it a safe place as a result of the COVID-19. However, meatpacking and manufacturing of pork, beef, and poultry at the best of times, pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, is an incredibly dangerous line of work. And it's for that reason. This is not a pandemic-driven piece of legislation. This is the nature of the meatpacking, the business at hand. And those workers face dangers every day, every shift they report. And I think it's incredibly important that we move this legislation forward.
Thank you, Mr. Utick. At this point, I'd like to thank Representative Wolgamott for his willingness to help or work with the parties moving forward here. And I hope you utilize the advice from other people on this committee. So seeing no further discussion, Representative Wolgamott, you wrap this up so we can have a vote.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much to the members of the committee and to the testifiers for the productive and respectful conversation today. Again, I'm looking forward to working with those who have shared their concerns to find solutions. But I know this, meat and poultry processing workers are essential workers. Let's not just call them heroes, let's treat them like heroes. They sacrifice so much to make sure that families in my district and in your district and all throughout the state have food on their tables. This industry is important enough to our country that the Defense Production Act was invoked to keep these plants open. That shows that these workers are important and we need to provide a safe and healthy workplace for them, not just during a pandemic or a time of crisis, but far into the future. That's why I'm presenting House Forward 800 to you today, and that's why I'm asking for your support to send this bill to the Judiciary Committee, make sure that we're supporting meat and poultry processing workers all throughout our state. Thank you, members, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Representative Vang, to your motion.
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 800, the first engrossment as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law.
Okay, thank you. The motion is before us. Mr. Smith, please call the vote on House File 800.
Chair Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin, aye. Vice Chair Vang.
Aye.
Vang, aye. Representative Anderson.
Anderson, no.
Anderson, no. Representative Burkle.
Burkle will pass.
Burkle pass. Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen R.
Hansen R, aye.
Hansen R, aye. Representative Hansen J.
Hansen J, aye.
Hansen J, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Aye. Representative Lewick.
Lewick, no.
Lewick, no. Representative Miller.
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nelson.
No.
Nelson, no. Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. Representative Burkle.
Pass.
All right. Eight ayes and four nays, Mr. Chair.
Okay, on a vote of 8-4, the motion prevails, and the bill, as amended, is on to its next stop. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. It's 2:29, and we are adjourned.